Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Teresa.
And I'm Pat. We are with North Coast Food Web, working to build healthy communities through food and agriculture.
Joining us today is Linda Perkins. Linda is a resident of Astoria and a renowned baker and cook, and we're just really excited to have her come talk to us about food.
Oh, thank you so much. I have so much respect for the Food Web. It has such a far-reaching vision of drawing everything together in the county, and I just have so much respect for that.
Oh, Linda, thank you so much.
Linda, it's great to have you here with us today. One of the things that we always love to hear about is, how did you wind up here? How did you get to Oregon, to the North Coast?
Oofta, I am from Minnesota. And at the age of about 35, I realized that I had had my lifetime's allotment of snow.
That can happen.
I know.
In Minnesota.
Yes, for sure. If it was going to happen anywhere. So I bought a new truck, and I wanted to see all the national parks. And so I took a year off, and I got my dog, and I put 28,000 miles on that truck, and I went to most of them. And then I was also trying to find a new place to live, and I love the West Coast. California was a little too expensive, and Washington was a little too special, and so I ended up in Oregon, and I just love it. So many regular people.
No offense to our Washington listeners.
Really?
Oh, I'm sure she means that in a lovely way.
Sorry, especially if you're a donor. But I really love it here. It's gorgeous. It's lush. The people are wonderful. It's where I picked. I'm so happy that I was able to pick where I live rather than just happening someplace.
Well, I'm really excited that you picked here because you've brought so much to the North Coast community. And, I know that you love to bake and you love to cook because I've experienced the wonderfulness that you produce. Mm-hmm. But I'm just curious, how did you start cooking? How did you start baking? Where did you learn to do that?
You know how you are always the opposite of your parents? Oh, I hope my mother isn't listening. And my mother was not domestic at all. She had people for that. But my paternal grandmother, such a wonderful cook. And she taught me how to cook. And I think that's what it was, my own form of weird rebellion or small rebellion against my parents. But isn't that sad?
Cooking was your rebellion?
Isn't that sad? But it's true.
So your grandmother taught you to cook.
Yes.
Did you learn to can? Did you learn to preserve or baking? Or
yes, you know, but baking is what I most picked up from her. She was such a good canner, but I was always afraid of canning. I was always afraid I would kill my family. I know that's so sad.
She's terrified of canning.
I know it's so sad, but I'll make jams and jellies and things that you generally don't kill your family with, but I am just so afraid of just killing my family with a jar of asparagus that I just don't make it. And I know that's sad, but...
No. Well, there's many things that you can can that will... Probably not kill.
Yeah. Well, you know how the way that you get good at something is you make all the mistakes. If you're going to be a seamstress, it's true, though.
That's true.
The sleeve on upside down, you put the sleeve on backwards, you put the left sleeve on the right sleeve, and you do all those things wrong, and then you know how to do it right. At least that's how I learn. And so if I was to make asparagus and make the jar with botulism and make the jar with salmonella and then make it right, it just wouldn't work because I wouldn't have any family left. So I just don't do it, and I'm so sorry that I don't.
But you are an extraordinary baby.
Thank you so much.
Which I have deep respect for.
Yeah.
I don't always have the patience for baking. It's the whole precision recipe.
It's very scientific.
Well, my background and my schooling is in biochemistry, so that might be part of it, that I'm just kind of like the science geek, and you get to be kind of, you know, chemical reaction with baking, so it might be why I like it.
Well, it certainly turns out delicious, I have to say that.
Thank you.
So you bring your baking skills to a lot of different areas. I know just recently in December, there was an amazing enterprise that you took on. It was for the Clatsop County Animal Shelter, and they have an enormous bake sale every year. And it was a little special this year. Tell us what happened.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I use the word special advisedly.
Or interesting.
A euphemism, yeah.
Yeah.
So Clatsop Animal Assistance is a nonprofit and such a wonderful group of people. They're associated with the county animal shelter, but the county only budgets about $300 a year for all of the vet care and medicines for all of the animals there.
$300?
And I don't begrudge them that. The county makes such hard decisions. Do you get Fido his flea medicine, or do you save the meth baby? I mean, there's so many hard decisions that they make. And so the solution is that this nonprofit, Clatsop Animal Assistance, picks up, like, you know, the remaining $60,000. And so this bake sale is for them. It's part of their big fundraiser. And so it's really a big bake sale. We took in $17,846 this year.
That's so amazing.
At a bake sale.
No, that's quite
it's
a bake sale.
It's pretty extraordinary.
Well, and it's not really, I mean, just a big sale. People, you know, make giant donations. One lady paid $500 for a box of cookies. So it's more, you know, like take baked goods and then give a donation type thing. But this year, 10 days before the sale, some meth addicts broke into our storage area. Oh my gosh. And they took a bunch of stuff. We have them on video hauling stuff out of there. And then we got their license plates, so they were caught. But the thing was, they're meth addicts and they were in that room and there aren't cameras in that room. We had to throw everything away. And that was such a painful decision. And then we only had 10 days and we had to start over.
And you had to bake thousands of cookies.
It was just crazy.
Thousands.
So the Rogue Brewery, they let us use a bunch of their people, Sarah Savage, their assistant manager, and then their ovens overnight. And one night they baked us like 580 dozen cookies. It was the most amazing thing. But everybody sitting in this room, everybody from the food web, you know, baked a bunch of stuff. I just kind of like, I was just like downtown crying, oh, can you help me?
But you had a wonderful response. You had so many people step up.
It was
up.
A great response.
Yeah, so we even made $3,000 more than last year, which was really something.
That was really inspiring.
I have to say I felt really inadequate because you know quite well how much I whined about the pinwheel cookies.
I learned some new words.
I have a descriptive language about making the pinwheel cookies.
Hey,
I made pinwheel cookies, a couple batches, and I glued little leaves on little pear cookies. And I'm whining about making pinwheel cookies. And then Linda sent out the email thanking all the bakers for all the things she had done. Talk about feel inadequate. People really stepped up.
Oh, yeah.
In a major big way.
Yeah. What an amazing community. One, for everybody to come together and bake all this stuff and make really, really beautiful stuff. But then for everybody then to come to the event and throw money at us. It just couldn't be better. It was amazing.
Well, there's something about baking and food that I think that really brings people together. Mm-hmm. And that's a really wonderful way to ask for donations and to give support.
And you toss in animals.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know.
Puppies and cookies.
I know. Actually, one of the things I loved, and since we're talking about food, was the dog cake. So describe that, because it was terrifying but amazing.
Here's the goal for my dog Sputnik's birthday. I made him a cake because he is not overindulged. And it was a cake. It was made to look like a carrot cake. But what it was the cake part looked like carrot cake. It's ground turkey and craisins and shredded carrots. And then the frosting is mashed potatoes. And then I hit it with a torch so that it looks like it's all meringue. And then I put sprinkles on it. And so Tim Kennedy cuts pieces off and sells it to people with dogs. And so it looks just like cake. And that in itself, I think, is funny. But people come up and they're always taking little pieces, like little crumbs off it to try it. And we have signs all over. It says, don't try this. This is meat. This is for the dogs. And but still, it's so funny.
Meat cake for dogs.
But what a great idea. I'm sure the dogs love it, too. It looked amazing.
But we sell like 50 pieces of it. We make 2 or 3 cakes every year.
That's just incredible.
Yeah.
So you bake now for a local cafe.
Yeah, Street 14.
Tell us a little bit about that. How's that going?
It's so fun, and it's so funny too, because everybody there is at least half my age. And so generally the math problem is take my age, divide it in half, subtract 5. And so they're all like a little unsure having me there. And one little girl was so cute. She came up to me super earnestly and she said, you know, I am really not prejudiced against old people.
And we are so grateful.
But it's so fun baking. You know, I'm a morning person, so I just get up and I go and I bake their stuff. And sometimes they let me bake my own recipes, which is fun too. But it's, you know, if you love to bake and then you get to work someplace where you do that, it's just really
so it's always interesting
fun.
To me what like whatever time I walk into a coffee shop. There's goodies ready. So what time do you have to start?
Oh, it's yesterday. No, I start baking at 4.
Wow. Oh,
and I'm having trouble adjusting to getting up that early. And how I know is one morning, see, I use a flashlight because, you know, I don't want to turn all the outside lights on. So I use a flashlight to get down to my car. And so there was a herd of elk in the yard and then they stampeded and they don't make noise, you know, like holler or anything. It's just the thundering of 50,000 pounds of meat going across your driveway. And so I realized that I was going to work 13% awake. And at that point, then it went to 100.
you notice the 13% awake. I think that precision speaks to why Linda is such a great baker. And if you haven't tried either the pumpkin bites or the apple spice bites, I highly recommend them.
Yeah, they're
delicious.
Those at Street 14 in Astoria.
Yeah. And those are Jen, the owner's recipe. Really, really good.
Yeah.
Totally addictive.
Yeah. So one of the ways that I met Linda was through the Olney Grange, which we both go to events out there. And one of the fundraisers that the Grange was having out there, it was a bingo night, and we had a great raffle, and people donated lots of different things. They donated lots of baked things, which Linda was very generous and donated those, but she also donated some cooking classes. And so tell us about doing that. I mean, I didn't know before that you taught cooking classes. So
yeah, just out of my house. Just I guess the most popular one is bread. There's a no-knead bread that's very easy to make, and you just get such a good, beautiful, rustic, crusty loaf. The second most popular is Chinese appetizers. And then the third most popular is jams that don't kill your family.
Is that how you average label?
No. Yeah. I'll do a class like also people requesting recently somebody requested that soft pita bread that they use in gyro sandwiches, and we figured out how to make that. Somebody requested macarons, the French, I don't even know if I'm saying it right, but the little French sandwich cookies. So you can request something too, or you can have a structured class. I do a structured grilling class, but it's just $25 a person, and then sometimes like grilling, you know, if you want to do ribeyes, that's a little more money, but it's fun. I enjoy it. And a really good thing that's come out of it is I've gotten some really good friends, people that I've met that way. And then we've remained really good friends. So that's kind of cool, too.
How does one find out about these classes?
Oh, it's a secret.
I was going to say, it's a well-kept
You
secret.
Have to know. You have to be in the know.
No.
It's like the secret supper clubs in Portland, right? You have to be on the list.
Yeah, well, no, people can contact you. Because also the thing that we were talking about earlier, you do, you teach classes out of your home, but you will also go to someone's home. Like if someone got a group of people together, you could go and do a class at someone's.
Yeah. And also sometimes it's easier for someone to learn in their home how to make things. It's just not as scary. You'll see this is how you do it on your stove with your things, your pans, your utensils. And then it just sticks better in their brain. A lot of times, especially with young kids, I will not send them home with a finished product. I send them home with a dough. I send them home with filling. And then they have to make that again that night in their home. And recently, I'm so sorry, Sarah Savage's son, and he's such a good boy. But he took a class in making the Chinese bao, the steamed pork biscuits.
That sounds like a fun class.
I sent him home with everything. And then the dog jumped up on the counter and ate it. Oh, I felt so bad for him.
He thought it was dog cake.
Those are amazing. I love those steamed buns.
So sad.
Yeah. I want to come to that class.
I know. Let's do that one. So while I'm thinking about it, I just want to take a moment and let everybody know that you are listening to Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM, and KTCB Tillamook 89.5. We're also streaming live at coastradio.org, and you can listen using the TuneIn app on the mobile device of your choice. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Food Talk, and we are talking with Astoria resident Linda Perkins, who bakes and cooks and does classes and is an all-around expert about food.
No.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
So, Linda, I'm curious. You said that your grandmother really taught you how to cook, but as I'm listening to all the things that you're doing, like what inspires you to cook the things that you cook, or what's the drive behind your cooking?
That's really interesting. I think it's just to make delicious things, and a lot of times it's just to figure out what I can do best with what's at hand, you know? Like if somebody gives you a big bag of borage, what are you going to do with it? That kind of thing. I have found a tool that I really like recently, and I probably told you guys about it, but it's if you have a lot of cookbooks, it's like an indexing site, and it's free on the internet. It's called... Can I talk about that?
Yeah.
Eatyourbooks.com. And so what you do is you just enter the ISBN numbers of your cookbooks. And if you get a big bag of borage, or you have a lot of summer squash, or you have any item, it indexes all of the ingredients in all of the recipes in your cookbooks. And so
oh my
you
gosh.
just enter You just enter.
I love that.
Have you used this? Marianne's nodding.
Marianne's nodding. Yeah. She's.
I have not heard of this. I'm really excited about this.
It's just so good because so you can go on the internet and you can find a lot of recipes. But the thing about cookbooks is those are copyrighted, so they may not be on the internet. And you bought that cookbook because you love that chef, yes. You know, or that writer. So you want to make those things, and it just lets you use your whole library. I find myself going to 2 or 3 cookbooks most of the time, but this way you can use your whole library. So for instance, once I just wanted to make some little Vietnamese salad rolls. I didn't want to buy big wrappers. I just wanted to make the wrappers too, and I couldn't find them in any of my Asian cookbooks. I plugged it into the thing and it was in a flatbread book. I never would have thought to look there, you know.
That's incredible.
Anyway, it's free and it's a really good site.
So tell us again what that site is.
Eatyourbooks.com.
Eat Your Books.
Yeah.
I am so looking that up.
I'm checking that out.
Really good.
Because really, a lot of the recipes that are on the internet, if you just Google a particular recipe, mm-hmm. not always great recipes.
Lowry's so salt and risky. Half a teaspoon yeah. of garlic salt.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I've had really mixed results with it too. I think sometimes people are basically just copying mm-hmm. a recipe out of a book and putting it online, which, mm-hmm. But at the same time, some of them, you don't know that they've been tested. And that's mm-hmm. the one thing about a cookbook is that the recipes have been tested. People have performed mm-hmm. them over and over again to make sure that they work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you can put some trust in them. Having said that, I still will make things out of cookbooks and have them fail miserably. So, I don't know, user error, you know, sometimes that happens.
We have a joke at our house about recipes because I love reading food magazines and yeah. cookbooks. I just love it. And I love reading recipes and they'll sound really good. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to make this recipe. And my rule of thumb is I always follow the recipe pretty much to a T the first time. Because I want to see how a recipe writer intended it. Mm-hmm. And invariably, I'm like, that doesn't make the cut. So, you know, probably about 1 out of 50 recipes that I try actually makes it into my collection.
Rotation.
Yeah. It's such an interesting process.
Do you devise your own recipes at all? I mean, have you baked or cooked enough?
It's so interesting you said that because they have these candied hazelnuts that are a byproduct down at Street 14 of making hazelnut syrup, and they're really delicious on their own. But they asked me to make recipes for them, so I made an apricot hazelnut tort, and then they have this coffee there, Hairbender by Stumptown, and then I made this Hairbender chocolate hazelnut tart. Oh, it's so good. Anyway, so those were delicious recipes that I made.
So how do you go about doing that? Do you just you know that you have a crust that you
yeah so there's can make there's a then... crust that I can make, and then I just ground up the hazelnuts that were candied, and I just started adding things, eggs and butter and sugar, woohoo, and apricots. That sounded like a good idea, and that turned out good. And then I really liked the chocolate and the coffee.
But that's where it's really helpful to know, like, proportion. Yeah.
To understand exactly. the science
what's
of
gonna
it.
What's going to make it hold together and not go all over the place.
So I just have to ask you this question, because I've been, over the holidays, I was trying to do some baking and wanting to cheat and go fast and double recipes. Mm-hmm. And I know there's some, especially with baking, there's some recipes that you can't double. I have a banana bread recipe that I love. Mm-hmm. And very clearly it says, you know, cannot be doubled or frozen. And I'm sort of terrified because I kind of want to try doubling it just to be rebellious.
Why?
But I'm nervous because, well,
it says not
but I know, but who said, why can't you double it? And then other recipes I double and it's fine.
You know, okay, so there's
so
this thing.
What's
that's
the doubling
called,
thing?
There's this thing called mass effect. So you can see if you have a big bowl of dough and it's one thing, there's going to be a certain amount of surface area on the outside where things don't touch, molecules aren't interacting with other molecules or interacting with the bowl. And then you double the recipe and it's just a little bit more that surface area that's touching the bowl, but there's a lot more things interacting inside, and so maybe a lot more gluten is formed because molecules can touch each other and form those not covalent, what are those other ones, ionic bonds, you know. Sorry.
No,
I really say whatever true. Word and
you
we
can
go,
look
uh-huh.
it up on, you can look it up on the internet, and it's called the Linda Perkins effect. No, I'm just kidding.
See, that's
called,
really helpful information
no,
to know
it's
why.
Called the mass effect.
The mass effect,
there are
okay.
Real, that's the main reason that you can't double things. But there's other reasons too, like doughs, like making them smaller, like it's just not getting enough interaction when you need it with other parts.
So if you try to cut something in half, it also
sometimes
won't work.
Yeah, sometimes, especially with yeast things. And so if it says it won't work, I mean, there's a reason. Somebody's trying to save you some trouble. So if you want to double it, just use two different bowls. Make two batches.
Well, that's what I generally do now is I'll just have two batches going on simultaneously and just be making them side by side. But I've just always wondered. So thank
There's nothing so crazy making as when you tell somebody, don't make this in a crock pot, and they do. You're like, oh, Lord, don't you have a mother?
So there are some rules in cooking that should be followed is what you're saying. Yes.
But part of it is, I mean, and that's how you learn is you break those rules and then you realize, oh, that really didn't work.
I put that sleeve on backwards. Oh, there's botulism in that asparagus.
Well, I haven't killed anybody yet, but I think that my husband Packy would certainly say that I've experimented badly sometimes. There's definitely some
dinner. Instead of banana bread, you have a doorstop or something.
Right? Yeah, well, he's politely sat through some pretty dubious experiments.
Oh, it's part of the fun of cooking.
Oh,
yeah.
Poor Dale. Oh,
Dale, Linda's husband.
Your husband must sit through a lot of experiments.
Okay, so I think like Jamie Oliver as like a celebrity is a really like appealing person. And he had something that was called like, oh, the best thing on earth or something. So I tried it and it was this beet cream and anchovy thing. And I almost killed my husband. And so what he did is he went out and found some guy on the street. He was a roofer. And he's like, this guy wants to come to dinner. What do you got? And I knew I had like this horrible beet thing that I nearly killed him when he tasted it. And so I had to like quick boss some steaks and Dale just did that so he wouldn't have to eat the beet.
He just went out and randomly found someone to come to dinner.
Beets and anchovies?
Oh, it was horrible. I mean, it's as horrible
like
as
a spread?
Yeah, Jamie Oliver is a liar. No, it was some kind of entree, but oh no, it was
not to your taste.
Oh, it was up there with like, you know, lutefisk. I'm sorry, Scandinavian community.
I haven't
tasted lutefisk yet because it scares me.
Yeah, I'm from Minnesota, and I have, and I am speaking from experience.
Not
so
everyone.
So aside
has
from the beet sardine or anchovy or whatever that was, what are you cooking these days when you're not baking?
Let's see. I don't know why, but I've just been cooking a lot of things with green beans and a lot of soup. So that's not very exciting,
soup is,
but they're winter food, and I don't know how I got on the green bean kick, and that doesn't sound very exciting. But there's a soup that I really like, and you know what? My grandma, the one that was such a good cook, she used to make it. It's a potato soup, so it's like potato and chicken stock. I think there's some onions and mushrooms if you have them in there. And then ham and green beans, and it is so good. And so that's the kind of thing, just like winter.
Fresh, frozen green beans either? Does it matter?
You know what I really like are those ones at Costco. It's just two pounds, and they're all trimmed, and they're the thin, almost haricot vert. I really like those in the winter.
Nice.
So talk a little bit more about soup. That's one of those things that people are oftentimes intimidated about, making homemade soup. And the stuff in the cans is so
gloppy.
Yeah. So what are some tips that you would share?
Well, I think that if you just build flavor from the bottom up, especially if you're trying to do a vegetarian thing, and I think that the longer you let things cook, and I'm not talking hours of simmering, but I mean if you start out with an onion and you cook it in some olive oil or some butter, whatever you choose, for 10 minutes, it'll just have a lot more flavor if you just sweat it than if you just sweat it for 2 minutes. And then if you add some celery and some carrots, maybe some pepper if you want it, like green pepper if you want it, if you're feeling like something like that, and then cook it another 10 minutes. And so rather than doing all the simmering at the end, if you start building the flavor in the first layers, I just really think it makes a difference. And that's what I would suggest. And then sometimes I use my freezer kind of as a prep kitchen. Like I buy garlic in a big bag all peeled, and I put it through the food processor, and then I just bag it up and freeze it, and I just rip off a knob when I need it so that I'm not always chopping garlic. I know that's lazy, but it's just what I do.
It's smart.
Yeah. And then once a year I make just a big giant batch of caramelized onions, and I put them in quart bags in the freezers. And it takes a long time to make, but you only have to do it once. I do the same thing with veal stock. I just make a giant batch of it. You can get the veal bones at Safeway if you beg and beg and beg. They'll order them for you. But that kind of thing, just building flavor from the bottom. So if you have veal stock and you have caramelized onions in your freezer, wow, you have French onion soup in 15 minutes. Yeah.
So talk about caramelizing onions, because that is so amazing, and that is a great way to add flavor. And it is a little time consuming, but what is that? I mean, you just cook them really slow, and slow.
Yep, just put some people do it in a crock pot, but I've never tried it. I was just thinking of trying that this year. But you just put them in a...
Do you slice them thin?
And then put them in a... I have a big oval cast iron Le Creuset type enamel thing, but just a big heavy pot, and then you just cook them over, you know, medium low heat for it probably takes 2 hours, and just till they get nice and caramel and brown. You have to be brave. Don't burn them, but don't just, you know, wimp them out. You got to be brave. There's
Do
so
you
many
stir
things.
Them very often?
You know, I bet once every 10 minutes, mm-hmm. because I let them get brown on the bottom and then stir them up, you know.
Mm-hmm. Just not burned.
Yeah, not that burnt crispy type of brown, and that tastes good too. But this is just the almost jelly kind of brown.
You know, I was thinking, Linda, about the onion thing, and if people haven't experienced the difference between an onion that you've sautéed for maybe just a minute mm-hmm. before you move on to the next mm-hmm. step versus something that you've let go for 10 minutes or maybe even 30 minutes, which is really popular in Indian cooking.
Yeah.
So experiment with that. Cut up an onion and cook it for just a few minutes and taste it, and then cook it a little bit longer and play around with the heat and get a sense of what the difference is in those flavors. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, there's a woman named Deborah Madison. She's such a good vegetarian cook.
She's amazing.
And she has a soup book.
I have that book.
Do you meet too? Oh, but
love
Pat
that
doesn't.
Book.
If you would like to, if you're thinking.
I'm going to eat your books.
if you think, like, you know, you want to trade a kid in for it would be worth it. but if you can get your hands on that book, that's a really,
Almost,
really good soup
I think
soup
every
book.
Soup I've cooked out of that has been good.
It's a great book.
And it really teaches you how to build flavors.
It's Deborah Madison. It's just vegetable soups or vegetarian soups?
I think it's vegetable soups. It might be vegetarian soups. I can't remember, but it's her.
It's Deborah Madison, yeah.
Soup book, yeah.
It's a little paperback.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great, great book. I make a tomato soup out of that. It's a cream of tomato soup, but I always forget. I'd never add the milk in the end because just if you cream up this, you don't need it. It's so good, and it's great for if you have vegans coming over.
Yeah, and her black bean soup is so good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, I'm going to go make soup today.
I think so.
It sounds good and wintery.
I know.
It's wonderful.
It does. It does. Well, I'm looking at the time, and I'm shocked that we've almost made it through half an hour. I just want to say thank you.
Without killing anyone.
Without killing anyone. That's good. I'm leaving.
No people were harmed.
I am extremely hungry, though, and so I'm going to have to go have a snack. I just wanted to really thank you, Linda, for stopping by and talking and cooking with us.
Well,
it was so inspiring. And if people want to find you, find out how to connect with you if they're interested in cooking classes, how would they do that?
It's really not a secret. you can call me. My phone number is 503-380-5151. And I have an email address, but it's my maiden name, Linda J. Thurmes. Linda, LINDAJ. THURMES at hotmail.com.
That's great. And do we want to talk a little bit about upcoming events?
We do have
some
great
fun stuff going on.
We do indeed. So I don't know how many of you got to come to our first Food Film Festival night in January. Thank you for everyone who did, but it was great. We're doing it again in February. These are all fundraisers for North Coast Food Web, raising money for our community kitchen that we're building at our new building. And so on February 14th, it's Valentine's Day, we're starting out with an open house at our new building. So you can come by and see where the kitchen will be. And that's at 577 18th Street. And that's from 5 to 8. That's during Art Walk Night. And then afterwards, starting at 9:30 at the Columbian Theater, we will be showing the film Chocolat. That is with Juliette Binoche and Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp.
And it's going to be amazing. A wonderful way to wrap up your Valentine's night.
Oh, and be sure and stop by the Voodoo Room before the movie starts, because Josh will have a special cocktail.
He will. I'm really curious to see what cocktail he comes up with for this movie.
It's themed to the movie.
Themed to the movie.
Should be fun.
So it should be a lot of fun. And it's all. And so the admission is by donation. We're going to have apps for sale at the event and drinks. And it's a lot of fun. It's a great night. And you're helping to raise money to build a community kitchen. So we can teach cooking classes. Maybe Linda will come and teach some classes for us. And we'll have a lot of fun and really get people cooking with fresh food in our community. And another great way to connect with local food, I want you to save the date, April 11th. And that's the spring, the Master Clatsop County Master Gardeners Spring Into Gardening Show. This year the theme is Food, Glorious Food, and Food Web will be there teaching classes, doing demonstrations, doing workshops. And we're also going to be hosting Meet Your Farmer at Spring Into Gardening this year. So it's going to be a great way to connect with some of your local farmers. So for anyone who wants more information about that, northcoastfoodweb.org or info@northcoastfoodweb.org is a great way to get in touch.
So lots of things coming up. Thanks to our engineer today, Marianne, and to Luke and Katie for our theme song. And thanks, Linda, for joining us. And thank you for joining us today for fresh conversations about local food on the North Coast.
And this show will be available as a podcast from coastradio.org.